Hey everybody, this is Phil Town.
And this is Danielle Town.
Oh, welcome to the Invested Podcast. We're coming to you from Atlanta, Georgia. And
the middle of Switzerland.
So cool. We've been doing this podcast for 5 years, and almost all of that time, Danielle has been in Switzerland, and I've been out here in the U.S., and it's gone pretty good. It gives us a reason. Danielle is my daughter, if you guys haven't known that already, if you're new to this podcast, but she's my daughter. She's a lawyer. She lives in Zurich.
Wow, we're going full introduction
today.
Well,
just for the split second here, because
Phil Town is my father. Mm-hmm. He lives in Georgia. I've been in America. He does investing and has been teaching me about investing since
a book called Invested about man, when was that?
That was a couple of years ago. Time has no meaning anymore. I know everybody says that now, but I now measure time in terms of when did I get COVID? Because since then, basically nothing's happened in my life. So I know I got COVID almost 2 years ago. So the book must have been 4 years ago, 3 years ago.
Danielle is one of these lucky people that got long COVID, and it's amazingly difficult to get past it. She's working on it hard, and I just watched this movie called Interstellar, which is a sort of, you know, it's a galactic space movie about, you know, apocalyptic Earth, and they've got to escape to save humanity. But what it's really about is about a father and a daughter, and it is really sweet. If you've got a daughter, or if you're a daughter and you've got a dad, you want to watch this movie. It's about, you know, what are your priorities? It just made me realize how lucky I am that I get to do this with you.
I'm lucky. Cool. I haven't seen the movie, but it's very sweet that it reminded you of us. Or at least I assume it's very sweet.
And it's also incredible that out of all of the, you know, the life experiences you have, that we've ended up working together, you know, working in the same industry. Which is amazing. It's just so cool. We're both kind of deep into this investing world. Really, really neat.
It's pretty weird.
Well, let's go diving into it. I mean, I was just thinking about Warren Buffett when I said that, and I'm quite sure Warren would have loved one of his kids to be into what he's doing, kind of the way he does it, you know, but everybody has different interests in life, you know. So we're lucky that way. And we're talking about Buffett because he just had his annual meeting, and it was this, you just never know if it's the last one at his age. He's 91, Charlie's 97, and they were both there. They're both, they've still got very well-functioning minds, and maybe a little slower getting the thought out the door, but the thought is solid, you know.
They were a little slower.
Yep.
I agree. They were a little slower, a little more stammering, but the thoughts were the same. And as I said last time, it's been like a real effort for me to watch this video of the meeting. And yet it's one that I have continually been trying to watch, because I just think it's so important, as you said last time, even if it's the same idea, hearing it differently, hearing it in a new way, hearing it put together with current information, maybe sometimes just hits all of a sudden, and you get a moment of insight with something you know you've heard before in a way that completely changes your thinking. And I know I've gotten a few of those, and we actually ended on it last time, which was that they've never made a decision based on what the economy's going to do. Mm-hmm. Now, they've said that over and over and over and over. They say it constantly. And somehow, in that talk, the way that Buffett said it in response to a question about market timing, it just hit me. They have never made a decision based on what the economy's going to do. What an enormous statement. I would say most investors would, even those who don't care about timing, would say like, well, you know, I do follow the economy. I do sort of pay attention to trends, and I do, you know, the people who are thinking big thoughts about macroeconomics, I read what they are saying and I find it interesting. Buffett didn't say any of that. He said, I have never one time made a decision based on what the economy is going to do. And that just, it hit me.
Yeah.
That was a big
one. It is a big one.
Because that's so much of what you hear these days.
It's a big one for a couple of reasons. What you just said. And then the other is that it just drives home how this strategy of investing that we've been teaching out here is so much about not making it more complex than it should be. It's about keeping it very, very simple. And a little bit like, you know, a fabulous artist that can do three lines and you have this beautiful thing. Hmm. It's like simplicity is really hard. It's really hard to keep it simple, right?
That is true.
So, I mean, it's maybe it's like that with a lot of things, but it's certainly like that with this investing strategy. And by the way, what you just said, that we hear this stuff and then finally it, you know, it clicks, something clicks. Mm-hmm. One of our instructors, one of our faculty members for Rule One, is Trent Pierce, a great Canadian guy, great investor, and he was really taking hard notes. And he basically said before the event started, a CNBC reporter got quoted as saying, "You don't go to church every Sunday in hopes of hearing the 11th commandment." You go to be reminded of the 10 you already know. I thought that was on the money. I don't know who said that, if that was That's Becky funny. Quick or one of the other people, but oh my God, was that ever on the money? Because we've laughed.
I love
about
that
it.
So many people, even in like mainstream financial media, are talking about it in the same way we do, of like, this is like going to church.
This is like going to church.
It's the dip into the religion once a year.
And as we've been teaching you guys for 5 years, that doing it the way Buffett does it is simple. It really is. It's there's just the difficulty is keeping it simple. And the problem is that the vast majority, vast majority doesn't cover it. It's 99 point something percentage of the people who are working on Wall Street have priorities that make it impossible for them to do this kind of investing.
I have a question though.
Yeah.
Kind of.
Well, let me finish that thought
bit.
Because the priority is that they will lose the pension fund money if they
Clear.
Try to play the long game. Yeah. Okay.
Understood. So for many years, you never went to Berkshire. I mean, I don't remember you ever. I didn't even know Berkshire existed.
No,
until
I would go to Sturgis.
So my question is, now that you've been either there in person or they've started streaming it online, so we've been able to watch it.
Mm-hmm.
Is this experience, like, has that changed things for you at all? Is the experience different now?
No.
Do you, and then follow up, do you wish that you had gone earlier?
No. First off, I'm not a networker person. I don't network. I never talk to anybody sitting next to me on an airplane. Like, just get my book out. For better or worse, that's me. And an awful lot of the people who go there go because it's a great Woodstock for capitalists kind of a moment. And you're seeing a lot of friends and you make friends there and then friends for life and that kind of thing. I don't do that very well. I probably should, but I don't. And I don't think there's anything. I mean, I get the benefit of reading everything Buffett has to say.
So before they started streaming it online, which was only recently, there would be like a summary that somebody would write up and you would read that?
Yeah, or I mean, remember, it's the Ten Commandments, and those Ten Commandments have been out there for 50 years. I don't think they've ever said anything new. It's just that when you keep going to church, suddenly you hear things differently for the first time in your life, mm-hmm. right? But I think if you just keep studying, you're going to get that also pretty much. I can't say that I regret not going because I didn't go this year. I preferred to go watch our horses run at Land Rover, Kentucky. So,
Yeah, but this year they've got it streaming, you know, so we can watch it.
Yeah, watch it on afterwards. And it's real interesting to me that when you look at the press and what they cut, when they edit it out 6 hours of stuff and then put it up on YouTube or CNBC, and mm-hmm. what they've picked out is always worthwhile and interesting. But honestly, it makes you sort of feel like, wow, 6 hours and this is what they've got out of it. Maybe not worth a trip to Omaha. And that's not true either. I mean, I think it's worth the trip to Omaha. But I do better reading this stuff at home and absorbing it there, I think, than I do in a room.
I think that's super fair, because I was even thinking, if I'm well enough to go next year, I don't even know if it's worth it to sit in that auditorium all day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not able to absorb and take notes that quickly.
And honestly, the slower Charlie,
maybe it's better to watch it later.
The slower Charlie and Warren go when they're speaking, is the harder it is to sit there for 6 hours listening to you know. It's going to get worse, I guess.
Before the streaming, how did you find out what was said in the meeting?
Pretty much just what Buffett puts out there in his annual letter. The only thing I'm really missing is questions and answers. And, you mm-hmm. know, I've been following him for so long, and so that I don't know that I've ever heard him answer a question differently than I would have expected him to answer the question. But it just kind of comes, it's sort of, you get it, you just get it better each time you go to church, you know, it's like right there. So I really see the value of going to church, but maybe going to church now by watching things on video is easier.
Mm-hmm.
And you still get 90%. I don't know, that's me.
I was just curious how that worked, like in the old days.
Yep, it's a good thought. Yeah, we've gone to Charlie's annual meeting for the same thing. It's like you're there. Here's what I regret about not going. I regret that I'm not one more body there in front of Charlie and Warren saying thank you for teaching us all this stuff. You know, I mean, that's really it, I think, is I'm there to just say thank you, you know. And it was a lot easier to say thank you to Charlie because you're only in a room of 400 people. But when he does his annual thing at Daily Journal, because that's all they can fit in there.
It's
and
true.
And Warren, you're there with thousands, but it's still like, man, thank you, Warren. I mean, you know,
it's a little bit like the presence is a vote of support.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that he has, or they have, however many people were there, let's say 20,000 or whatever it was, just that they can command that many people shows the influence. And so it is, in a way, like just the presence alone is a vote of support.
Yeah.
I never thought about it like that exactly before, but that's really nice.
So let's pick up where we left
off. So market timing.
Yeah, well, market timing, not a good idea.
So and we yet, ended with you talking about, you mentioning American Express.
Yeah, well, those are a couple of things, right?
Okay.
First off, market timing is, of course, trying to determine that you should be in the market or out of the market or in specific stocks or out of specific stocks at certain times. And just want to make the point that Buffett and Munger don't do market timing, and yet they're magically in big piles of cash at the right time over and over and over again. The one that really strikes me is that Buffett got pretty much out of the market in spring of 1987 and was loaded with cash when the market had that flash crash in October, and he loaded up. So, you know, they're just like, okay, part of it is just the way Berkshire produces cash, and it keeps coming in, and so he often has a lot of cash. But I don't think it's an accident that he's ready to pull the trigger with a ton of money when the trigger can be pulled for the reasons we've talked about. I mean, if it's not market timing to say I'm not going to buy anything because it's too expensive. Not the market, the things I'm trying to buy.
Yeah.
I don't have to make a judgment about the market if I can't get it, if I can't buy anything on sale. It takes care of itself. And obviously in the early days of Buffett's career, he would sell stuff into a hot market. He doesn't do that as much anymore. Part of it is Charlie's influence in the 60s to say that, look, let's just, we get a wonderful business. Let's just hold on to it. and it mm-hmm. will produce great returns for us. So that leads us to American Express, because Buffett made the point that American Express, they've held for since the middle 70s, when they bought American Express, when it had a zero book value as a result of some stuff that happened to it. But they recognized that the book value of the company doesn't include in its intrinsic value all of the value of the business operations itself, right? So without diving all into that, they bought American Express and they've held it ever since. And they basically made the point that because American Express is buying back its stock over all these years, their ownership has gone from something like 11% to 21%.
Yes, they did make that point. That right? was really, really eye-opening.
It really is. But then I kind of ran some numbers on how Ooh. Long they've held American Express. And I don't remember where I wrote that all down a few days ago. But the bottom line is that the rate of return, if you take the market price of American Express stock when they began, when they owned it, and the market price today, with their additional ownership almost double, their return on their investment is compounded at about 11% per year.
Wow.
All right. So
that is insane.
Isn't that interesting?
For this amount of time.
Yeah.
Absolutely nuts.
Yeah. It's a huge amount of time, and it's a huge return. And then when you look at the actual number, obviously they also have additional dividends from American Express, which add substantially to that number. It's not minor, you know. I'm guessing they probably were looking at when they started paying dividends, it was probably a 2% dividend on their purchase price, but now it's a 2% dividend on the current price, which is, you know, 5 times larger, and so their return is enormous on their dividends. But let's just say that adds another couple points, and you're at 13% compounded without doing anything. You're just sitting there. 13%. I mean, think about what people get from a bond that they own. They go down to their bank and they get, you know, a CD or something, and they have this bond. It's still American Express. It's a bond on American Express. It's a group of companies like that, blue chip companies. And they're getting 2% for 30, 40 years, 50 years, 2%. And Buffett's out there getting 13%.
Yeah, I mean, you got to buy it.
You got to buy it.
Back then.
But I mean,
you just go down to the bank like, well, hello.
You've got to decide that you want to own that
company.
You've
got to decide that you're going to buy American Express stock when the book value is zero. Like...
Well, yeah, that's why we do this stuff for 5 years.
Yeah,
just talking about
exactly.
how to do that, because look at the difference in your life. It's unbelievable. If you're in a bond and it's getting you 3% a year for 30 years, effectively you've doubled your money 1.5 times. Okay, so you've got 100,000 in the bond, and you know when the smoke clears, you're getting back 250,000 or something. You do what Buffett did. You get 13%. You're doubling your money every, a little slower than 5 years, about 5.5 years. And you do that for 30 years. You've got five doubles. So your 100,000 is 200, 400, 800, 1.6 million, 3.2 million. So over here, you've got this bond and you pick up an extra 150,000. Over here, you're picking up $3 million or something, or $2 million. I mean, the difference is just insane.
Yeah,
it is so insane. I just am staggered that more people don't understand this. Right.
So you're saying, just to make sure I get this, so it's 11% compounded. That's with the additional ownership because of the company buying back their own stock, and then also the 13% you're saying, and these are like rough numbers, right?
Yeah, rough. Assuming
was
overall 2%. Dividend, roughly.
Okay, was with the dividends. Okay, got it.
Time, right? Yeah.
That's wild.
Compared to a bond, right? And then you also want to compare that, fair enough, to like just buying the S&P 500, which is what Buffett recommends you do if you're not going to learn how to do this stuff properly. Mm-hmm. If you don't have the temperament for it, to just be patient, to wait, if you don't have the temperament to really learn it, then your best bet is to buy the S&P 500 index, and sit on it and just keep buying it. Just keep buying it because and just sit on it and you'll have ballpark a 9% return, not 13. But just to do that same comparison, a 9% return will double your money every 8 years. So in a 30-year period, you've got 3.5 doubles, basically. So your 100,000 became 200, 400, 800, and a little over a million. So the difference between sticking your money in a bond and not understanding this at all, and you get, you know, you make 200,000 or something, and putting your money in the S&P 500 at the recommendation of everybody on the planet because they know you're too lazy, you're too undisciplined, you're too busy, you're too stupid, you're too whatever it is that this is just too hard for you, then S&P 500, you know, and you're at $1 million. Okay, bueno. But if you are not too stupid or too lazy or too undisciplined and you think, I can actually do this. This is not rocket science. People do this all the time. There's 20,000 of them in that meeting every year to say, thank you, Warren. I do this and I really profit by it. And all of a sudden you've got $2 million instead of $1 million. I mean, how,
yeah.
If it's not any harder to do it than really buying the S&P 500, it's more fun to do this way. That's for sure. Because, and by the way, if you were to say, oh, it's pretty easy to buy the S&P 500. Oh, no, it's not. When this market starts to crash, I challenge you to go out and buy the S&P 500. You just go ahead and try. And everything in you will be emotionally screaming at you to don't get anywhere near the stock market. It's not going anywhere for the next 20 years. You know when you put your money in it, it's going to go down by another 50%. It's just emotionally a train wreck because you don't know what to do. So following the advice of the most well-meaning advisors, including Warren Buffett, to just stick your money in the index because you don't know how to invest is really begging the question, in my view. It may be begging you to do something emotionally. Yeah, go ahead.
It may be a giant question, what happens? And I found it really, really interesting that Buffett and Munger did not want to touch any sort of comment or prediction about what inflation was going to be coming up.
Yes.
There was a fantastic question from Daphne from New York City, who was the cutest. And she was a kid who's been attending the meeting. And she said she had the best question. She said the inflation rate has been north of 7% for the first time since 1982.
This is like a 12-year-old kid or something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Daphne from New York City.
Yeah, she was great.
She was amazing. And she asked this question. I was like, Daphne, you are reading everybody's mind. It was the perfect question.
Yeah.
So inflation's so high. And the question was, between 1970 and 1975, the Berkshire portfolio took paper losses, but it was when Buffett and Munger made some of the best investing choices, best purchases of their entire careers.
Yep.
So she asked, what is the one stock that we should bet on with this mysterious inflation future that we have? And they laughed and told her that they were very glad that she had been attending the meeting and that she had very bright prospects in her life and that what she should do. And they didn't even answer the question at all. Didn't even talk about the stock. They said what you should do is go develop a skill, a profession that you can make money at regardless of inflation.
Well, that's your best bet against inflation.
It's a nice answer.
Is to be
but
really
good
at something.
I found
it
to be a bit frustrating for somebody who came up with such a good question, spoke it beautifully, and then they didn't even answer it. So I was a bit bummed by that one. And there were a few other questions as well around inflation, and they just refused to answer.
Yeah. Yeah.
It bummed me out a little bit.
So we'll answer for them.
Well, let me explain why it bummed me out a little bit, because this is on the heels of the previous comment of we don't care at all about the macroeconomic situation. We've never made an investing decision based on economics.
Yeah. Almost like, we don't know. We don't know. We just buy companies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is right.
Well, yeah, kind of.
And yet, I think...
Wait. And
there's
yet,
such a...
The day, literally almost the day before this meeting started, they went out and bought $20 billion worth of Chevron. Chevron.
So?
An oil company. It's a commodity. They don't do commodity. And they just did commodity. And it strikes me that Buffett is kind of ducking it for a reason that he's often said, you know, what would you rather have, you know, a big wad of gold, take all the gold in the world, or 18 Exxons and all the agricultural land in America. And he's made that point a couple of times. Maybe that's where he's kind of, hey, read between the lines, because I'm telling you, these are the things you need to be in. Agriculture and oil are commodities that are critical in anybody's future. And he bought Occidental and he bought Chevron. And those are two humongous investments. He's pumped almost $40 billion into them in the last, well, less than a year, while busily saying, hey, we can't find anything to buy, and then immediately going straight out and buying those guys. So Buffett is going to do what's in Berkshire's best interest. And if it's in Berkshire's best interest to not answer that question in order to be able to invest the other $100 billion he's got sitting there, he will not answer that question.
I agree completely. I don't think anyone expected him to answer with a go buy Chevron, you know, or like go buy Apple or go buy or whatever. He wasn't going to name a company other than Berkshire, which I thought was a fairly obvious answer.
Yeah.
Which they also didn't say.
So I'm not buying it that he doesn't pay attention to what's going on out there in the world, in the economy, in the markets. I think he actually is very, very good at that and very smart. And that, in his view, owning 18 Exxons and all the agricultural land in a country is actually the answer to that question. You know,
maybe.
If you're in a heavily inflationary era, the other thing he said is the stock market's not going to keep up with it. That businesses struggle to increase their prices in order to overcome their cost increases, and the market pushes back on that. Right. I mean, out there, the retail market, the consumers are pushing back and saying, I can't keep paying more and more for this stuff. My wages aren't going up as fast as the cost of living, which is the case out there right now today. And so there's a pushback that happens against these companies, even when they have a big moat. So even your big moat companies might have trouble raising prices sufficiently to keep their profit margins wide. But what they
will also... Case in point, Netflix. Which you guys are sending your ideas about, and we're going to talk about it as soon as we're done with Berkshire in two episodes. So keep sending them in to questions@investedpodcast.com.
Yeah, we know. Netflix, yeah.
Let's finish up talking about inflation, and I want to hear the main points off of your list next episode.
Trent,
and then we'll wrap up Berkshire.
Okay. Main points in the next list. All right, so we're basically saying that we think that it's important when you're looking at Buffett and Munger to pay attention to what they do as well as what they say. So when they're not saying anything to a direct question like that, I would look very carefully at what they're doing. And what they're doing is they're buying critical commodities right now, which is very interesting.
That's a really good point.
Yeah.
Really, really good point.
All right.
Okay, let's end on such a good point.
Okay, good.
Thanks, everybody.
We'll be back.
Bye.
Talking about it soon. See you. Hi, guys. Thanks for listening to Invested. If you enjoyed this episode and you want more information or to listen to additional episodes, visit our website at investedpodcast.com and sign up for my virtual workshop right there. Spots are definitely limited for this event. I'm not kidding. They really are. They sell out very quickly. So everything discussed on this podcast, by the way, is either my opinion or it's Danielle's opinion. And it's really important, it's not to be taken as investing advice, because I am not your financial advisor, nor have I considered your personal situation as your fiduciary. So remember that. You're on your own here. This podcast is for your entertainment and education only, and I really hope you enjoyed it.